Hey, good afternoon, everyone. It's great to have you back. My name is John Kelly. If you're a previous attendee, you know that I'm a school psychologist, now a retired school psychologist, but more about that later on. But I want to welcome in Jeremy Glauser, my new friend and CEO of eLUMA. So, Jeremy, let me let you open
It's
things up
so
for
good
us
to be
today.
here, John. This is such a wonderful series. I'm so excited to kick this off. Incredible content, incredible lineup of speakers to come. And today we're going to focus on the multi-tiered system of supports for addressing mental health services in schools. And John has prepared an overview, and then John and I will also discuss questions. If you can go to the introduction and the agenda for us, John, I'll walk us through who eLUMA is, an agenda, introduce John, and just a few housekeeping items. But like John said, I'm the founder and CEO of eLUMA. And really, for us, it's about helping students achieve their full potential. And it just so happens that we get to work with kids in special education and mental health. It's such a blessing every day. It's highly motivating. And we were founded in 2011. So we've been around for quite some time, over 300 team members, and we're in 36 states, just past 32,000 students. It's a big milestone that we're celebrating as a team. We'd encourage you to follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. You can find our information there. We strive to create really good, valuable content that will help you as a professional, as a parent, as a human being. So let's walk through what you can expect. We will jump into a presentation here. That will be about 25 minutes or so. Then John and I will have a discussion and we'll have a QA. And we invite you to ask questions throughout the presentation, and then we will take them at the end as part of a discussion and a live dialogue that John and I will be having. At the bottom of Zoom, you'll see a chat that you can enter a question into. You can also see that we have closed captioning at the bottom of the slides if you need that. And John, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were saying that they can turn on the closed captioning through Zoom as well. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, there's a closed captioning button if anyone does need that. That is available on the toolbar.
Perfect. Thank you for clarifying that. This series is really focused on MTSS and mental health. It's going to last the entire school year. You can see some of the great people that are coming up: Kelly Valancourt, Shauna Kelly, Maurice Elias. Elias, sorry, and Paula Morrison. So make sure you go to eluma.com/webinars. That's where you can sign up. That's where you will be able to register. We always send out a recording and content after the webinars if you're not able to attend live. So please register. Great content. We'll go through some additional information about what's coming up at the end of our discussion today. Without further ado, I want to introduce John Kelly. John is an incredible human being and has accomplished a lot. And very excited to celebrate a recent retirement as a school psychologist from Commack School District, where he was at for 35 years. An incredible professional career, and excited for you, John, as you get to, do some new and exciting things. He's also an adjunct professor at St. John's University in the School of Psychology program. And some really key accomplishments here for me that just show his ambition and his way of giving back to what we're all trying to accomplish. But served as the executive on the executive board for the New York Association of School Psych, and then also was past president for NASP. Received numerous state and national awards, including the New York NYS School Practitioner of the Year, as well as the NASP School Psychologist of the Year. I think it's safe to say John is a pretty accomplished person, but what's more, John is very endearing. very committed to this field and is just a great human all around. I am getting to know John more and more and love every minute that I've got. So John, I won't rub your ego anymore. You know it's sincere, you know it's true. And so with that, I'm gonna hand it off to you.
Well, Jeremy, thank you. You know, it's always a little strange listening to someone kind of describe your bio, and I do appreciate everything that you shared there. Thank you very much. And I know I've said this before, but I'm very grateful for the relationship that I've built with eLUMA, and certainly the opportunity to have my office hours hosted by eLUMA, and certainly to partner with you on these presentations.
And you know what I just realized, John, is I think you were going to go through some of the office hours, and I went ahead and plowed right through that. So if there's any
conversation,
please add.
It's all good. It's a conversation, Jeremy, and that's the key thing. I am excited about this kind of new series, as you had said before, because what we've decided to do, rather than do kind of discrete presentations or have discrete conversations at different times during the school year, we've decided to create this series for you, for the audience, around multi-tiered systems of support. And really breaking down, what is multi-tiered systems of support framework? How does it really work within the schools? What does it look like? What are some of the things we need to be doing in the schools? Because we realize that for many folks, whether you be an administrator, an educator, a clinician working within the schools, it might look different. You might struggle with different aspects of it. So today, what we wanted to do was just really provide an overview of multi-tiered systems of support, how it relates to some of the other things we're doing in the schools. I'm going to present some of the big ideas. And then, as Jeremy said, him and I are going to kind of dive into a real good conversation about it. We do welcome your questions, your thoughts throughout the webinar. Please feel free to type it into the chat box. Our good friend George Dayton is going to be monitoring that chat box. And if something seems relevant, George, during the conversation, feel free to kind of jump right in and bring it up to Jeremy and I. So without further ado, I do want to start with some of the big ideas. And being a good Irishman, you'll have to forgive me and kind of go with it for just a little bit. I love to tell stories. You get me, you know, started on a story, and I'm going to kind of just keep going. But I love to incorporate stories into my presentations themselves. And this is one of my favorite ones, particularly as we talk about multi-tiered systems of support. It's a story about a small village at the bottom of a river, at the mouth of a river. And one day, one of the villagers goes out to the riverside, and he sees a small child floating by in the river. And so he quickly jumps into the river, swims out, grabs the child, brings him back to shore, and sends the child back up river. The next day, the same villager is down there, and he's just admiring the scenery. And now he sees two children coming by. He quickly swims out, grabs both of the kids, brings them back ashore, and sends them on their way. The third day he's down there, now he sees a group of children floating downstream, and he calls a few of his friends from the village and says, please come help. We need to save these children. And they dive in, they grab the children, bring them back to shore, and send them back up. They finally get together and they say, if this is happening every day, we need to put together a team. We need people monitoring that river, making sure that no kids are getting by. And the kids that are floating downstream, we need to jump in. We need to save those kids. And so sure enough, what the village did was they put together a team that would stay out there throughout the day, early evening, watching for kids that might be floating by. Until one day, one of the village elders said, what are we doing? Why don't we just take a walk back upshore and find out where these kids coming from? Why are so many kids floating by in the river? Why do we have to jump in every day just to save them in this crisis? And sure enough, they went back upstream. And what they found was that there was a bridge that many children tried to cross to go over that was missing slats in it. It was missing boards. And so some of the kids were able to make it across and jump across and do just fine. But other kids were falling through those cracks in the bridge, falling through those missing slots and into the river and floating downstream. Now, if we think about it, isn't that kind of what we do in the schools? Where we dive into that river every day with the kids. For 35 years, I spent my days diving into that river. Kids in crisis, kids who were struggling academically, kids who were struggling with mental health issues. And we would dive in, we'd save them, we'd pull them back to shore, and then send them back to the classroom or send them back home. But there are times we need to stop and think, what are we missing within our systems? What are we missing in terms of planks that might help some of those kids before we have to dive into the river, before we have to intervene in a crisis situation? Because the reality is that many of our kids in 2022 are struggling. They're struggling. It's been a difficult few years. I'm not going to spend time talking about the pandemic and the impact. We've all heard about the impact of the pandemic. We're at a point where it's just a recognition that there have been major, major changes in the way that our kids are feeling and major, major changes in the way our kids are functioning. And they're struggling. And they bring a lot more into the classroom than those books and papers and pens that we always think are in that backpack. No, they're dealing with a lot more issues that have nothing to do with curriculum, that have nothing to do with what the best teachers are going to present in that classroom. They're dealing with a lot of issues, oftentimes, that they're bringing in from the outside. You know, we've heard about the declaration of national emergency, the American Academy of Children and Adolescent Psychiatry, the pediatricians, the Children's Hospital Association, all have declared this national emergency. Our own Surgeon General has declared a national emergency as it relates to children's mental health. And so it's important for us as we kind of dive into this topic of multi-tiered systems of support and how do we really meet children's need, that we make sure we're on the same page with our definition of what is mental health. Because, you know, Jeremy and I were just kind of chatting a little bit before we went live here about, well, what is really mental health? And the reality is that oftentimes we think about mental health as mental illness. And while that is certainly one end of the spectrum, the reality is that mental health really does exist along a spectrum. And on one end of the spectrum is mental wellness. And so as we talk about mental health services within the schools and the provision of mental and behavioral health services within a school system, we're talking about that full spectrum of services, which includes the promotion of mental wellness. You see, all kids need to develop skills. We'll kind of dive into this a little bit more, social emotional competencies, resiliency building skills, because that all helps with that aspect of mental wellness. And then yes, some of our kids do need support when they're struggling with challenges in their life, when their mental health is presenting a challenge in their life. So it's really important for us as we have this conversation to have that broad concept of what is mental health, from mental wellness to mental illness. That's a really key concept. And we know for certain that the earlier we can intervene, the better off kids are going to be. No doubt about it. I could quote research for you. You could look up research. It's common sense. It's the quicker we can get to these kids, it's less expensive for a school district because we know that intensive services are more expensive. And so building up good prevention services, building up those good universal services is actually, economically makes sense for many districts. And we also know that unfortunately, the longer kids go without services, the more intense the services are going to be for those kids. So how do we effectively do this? Well, it's about developing a framework. And let's be really clear here. Multi-tiered systems of support is not an intervention in and of itself. We don't do multi-tier systems of support as an intervention. No, MTSS is a framework that we use to structure those services within the schools. And that's a really key distinction, that we recognize this as a framework and how do we fit in different parts into that framework. And we're going to dive into that just a little bit more. So I think that many of us, I don't want to make any assumptions here, but many of us are at least somewhat familiar with MTSS and realize there are different tiers, tier one, tier two, tier three, and that tier one is universal supports, something that all kids need that we provide to all students within the schools. Tier two is that kind of targeted support, kids who are starting to show emerging issues. We're starting to see some indicators for some maladjustment that might be there. Then of course, tier three is those intensive services that we provide. And we'll kind of dive into that a little bit more. But what's important to recognize is that services at any one of those tiers, tiers one, tier two, tier three, are mental and behavioral health services. We often get into kind of this false dichotomy or this kind of false argument about, well, what is a mental health service? What is curriculum related to social emotional learning or resiliency building? You know what? I've kind of gotten away from those arguments. And I'm going to say to you that any of these services that we provide at any of the tiers are a mental health services. And I think Jeremy and I might get to that just a little bit more. So, you know, one of the key things, and I know this is one of the areas that sometimes we struggle with, is RTI. And, you know, is RTI the same as MTSS, or can we use them interchangeably? Well, you know, there's different schools of thought on this. And I'm going to say to you that for me, MTSS, or multi-tiered systems of support, is an umbrella framework. And that RTI is an example of a multi-tiered system of support, but oftentimes RTI is focused on more academic interventions, academic supports. How is the student responding to the general curriculum within the classroom? Does the student need additional academic supports to develop reading skills or support them in their math development or writing skills? And we use data to help determine different levels that we have there, more in a response to intervention. Now with MTSS, because it's a broader framework, we bring into different factors that might impact upon that academic skill achievement. We bring into factors that might relate to social emotional adjustment. We also recognize that there are things in the child's environment, whether it be family or community, that might need intervention or might need support. So for me, the two are not the same. RTI is under the umbrella of a multi-tier system of support, but that MTSS is a broader umbrella and a broader framework. And this is a common graphic that many of us, you know, have certainly seen before. We recognize, you know, that the two can work hand in hand, whether we're talking about academic interventions or we're talking about mental and behavioral health interventions. We realize that the vast majority of our students can be serviced at that tier one universal level, that some of our students will need that additional kind of targeted support, and then a smaller percentage, hopefully a smaller percentage, will need those intensive supports. Now, just a quick note, we may touch upon this a little bit later on, that if we find that we're top heavy, meaning that we find that most of our resources are geared towards those tier three types of services, those intensive supports, we're providing a lot of, say, individualized counseling, or we're top heavy in terms of our special education numbers. I'm gonna say to you, we need to go back and we need to take a look at those tier one interventions, those tier two supports that we have in place. Because when we're top heavy in terms of tier three, that means that something earlier on in the process is simply not working for us. But we'll dive into that a little bit more. Now, there are some interesting graphics that are from around the country. It might look different in your part of the nation than it does in others. That's okay. It's all part of that framework. It's all part of that umbrella system that is developed, and recognizing that multi-tiered systems of support may be called a lot of different things, but we're basically talking about levels of support for kids. So here's a really key reframe that I think is important to have in terms of our mindset. One of the things that we often think of is somehow mental health services are separate. They're in their own silo. They're in their own kind of program, and we have separate people doing that, and we have our educational staff here, and we have our mental health staff here. I think that that's one of the areas that we need to do a better job at. We need to get out of our silos. We need to recognize the intersection between students' mental health and their ability to learn within that classroom. Because again, there's no doubt, the research is very clear on this, that when a student is struggling in terms of their mental health, they're going to struggle with their academics. And so there is no separate silo. And we recognize that when we focus on school-based mental health services, what we're really focusing on is the core foundation of what schools are all about. And so my reframe for you is to recognize that when we talk about providing mental health services, we're talking about providing supports for learning, providing supports for that ability for a child to function within the school, providing the ability for the teacher to be effective within that classroom. That's a key challenge. That's a key reframe that I want you to be able to think about and to be able to use. So this is a common model. It was developed by the National Association of School Psychologists in terms of what the multi-tiered system of support might look like within the schools, recognizing that all school-employed mental health professionals can be involved at those first tiers, that many mental health providers within the schools are providing targeted supports. And we recognize that there is a variety in terms of how schools handle those tier three services. Sometimes they have the personnel within the school to provide that. Sometimes they contract with something like eLUMA and provide virtual services for students. And sometimes they have services that are provided out in the community. But there's a recognition that it exists along a continuum. And finally, before I bring Jeremy back into the conversation here, what I think is very, very important for us to think about is that what we're really talking about is a layering of support services. Students who may need those targeted supports in that tier two, that supplemental support, don't stop getting the support at that tier one. They're not distinct silos. Kids who are getting those intensive supports, kids maybe who are in our special education programs, don't stop getting supports at a universal level or even maybe even at a targeted level that's open for general education students. And so what's very, very important as we think about multi-tiered systems of support is that we're not talking about distinct silos, we're not talking about separate layers, we're talking about a layer of support that exists at all three levels. So let me kind of pause for a moment here. I know that some questions are coming in. There's some surveys that are going on in the chat. But Jeremy, I'd love to kind of bring you back in. I'm going to stop sharing my screen here for a moment. And you would love to give you an opportunity to kind of dive into some of those big ideas
that we just talked about. Oh, I can't wait to dive in. This is just such an important topic. There's so much to unpack. I loved your comments about the RTI, MTSS, how we use the terms for mental health, SEL, behavioral interventions. As a country, we struggle with terminology and to get on the same page sometimes. And so one of the things that I wanted to follow up on and dig into a little bit more with you, John, is at what point and where does the MTSS and RTI interventions diverge? You had a slide on that, but let's go back and revisit that. What really is the difference between those if you can help reiterate and maybe even some examples that you can help us as we try to apply this.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, Jeremy. I appreciate it. You know, an opportunity to kind of dive into that a little bit more. You know, as I said, I look at multi-tiered systems of support as a framework. And that's a really key framing, no pun intended, for us to have in that, you know, that it's not necessarily an intervention. It's not just one way of doing things. It's really kind of a system of support or systems of support for students. And that can look like academic supports, which is much more, in my mind, what response to intervention or RTI is all about. You know, RTI is often, you know, related to academics. Now, that's not to say that sometimes some school districts I know do use response to intervention as relates to mental health support, such as, you know, students adjustment, behavioral adjustment, you know, when we have some supports built in, behavioral supports mm-hmm. for student, we're monitoring data, watching how they're responding to that intervention, making decisions. So listen, I get it. I don't want to kind of be so hard and fast and say, you know, RTI is only academic, but traditionally when we talk about response to intervention, we're recognizing that as talking about academics. But the broader network is really the multi-tiered systems support framework.
I really appreciate that, John, and clarifying. I need to give some credit to my comments, Ed Ryan on our team and some of his teammates have put together quite a bit of research. And I think some of the confusion does originate from where RTI began. RTI began before MTSS really was terminology that we were using commonly. And it was geared toward academic interventions. And to your point, it's not just, or we can't always just pigeonhole it to academic, but that's where a lot of it began. And over time, we obviously have behavioral intervention supports. We have social emotional supports and interventions. And as we've evolved, we've needed this broader framework to work and operate within. And I think that that's why sometimes we see confusion or interchangeably using RTI and MTSS maybe.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you, Jeremy. And I think that for me, it comes from the kind of concept of, A, we don't want to wait for kids to fail to provide some type of intervention. That when we have these tiered supports, as I said earlier on, we're catching kids early. And we know that through the research that early intervention is critical for outcomes. And so whether it be academics or, you know, social, emotional, behavioral type of factors, it's also about using data and understanding kind of what the data is telling us about students and recognizing, you know, when are certain times kind of normal trajectory or normal progression, you know, versus kids that might be veering off that expected growth and maybe needing those interventions.
It goes back to the story you told at the very beginning. Oftentimes we're intervening versus preventing, and the world is changing and it will continue to change. And sometimes we need to go back up at the top of the river and see where we might need to improve. You know, we've got some questions coming in that I'd love to pose, and this is perfect. These are great to build on. What are some of the common variations you see in districts implementing the MTSS framework?
That's a great question. And I'm going to freely admit that's not an easy one to answer because there is great variability. And oftentimes it comes down to, for me, two factors. One is the philosophy that the district is kind of operating under. And it's why I try to broaden our definition as we relate to mental health and recognize we're not just talking about mental illness and intervening for kids who are struggling or challenged with mental health issues, that we're really talking about mental wellness as well and the promotion of mental wellness. Mm-hmm. And so some of the variation comes in terms of where the services are targeted. And as I said earlier, if we find ourselves targeting or devoting a lot of our resources towards those tier three, those intensive services, I'm going to say to you, we're not doing enough at that tier one and tier two level. And so that's where some of the variation comes in. I do want to acknowledge also resources and that, you know, at times school districts are challenged, whether it be financial resources, resources in terms of personnel. There's great shortages that are out there, you know, in terms of school psychologists, social workers, school counselors, nurses, you know, within the education profession, those that provide mental health services, you know, unfortunately, there's some shortages. I think, and please don't, this is not a shameless plug for ILUMA, but I think it's where we're seeing the value of virtual services starting to come in. We saw the value of that during the pandemic, mm-hmm. where it can fill gaps for us within the schools themselves. So I think the two big areas of variation are one, the philosophy that the school has and making sure we have that broad philosophy of mental health promotion. And the second is kind of resources and acknowledging where resources are going to vary from district to district.
Yeah, I really appreciate that because a one size fits all approach never works, especially in our schools where there can be different socioeconomic or cultural or even geographical differences that required adaptation or just different priorities at the time. And to your point about innovation, I think that we've seen a lot of forced technological use in the past few years because of learning virtually and not learning virtually and a hybrid. And many, many teachers and administrators have had a lot of technology that they've had to adopt quickly. And in this area of MTSS and balancing the increased urgency to address mental health, we do need to be open to innovative yet research-based practices that will help students learn. Because in my experience, I'm a father of five and I've been doing this in schools for a long time, non-academic factors are an incredibly important element to academic performance. I mean, for previous to ILUMA, I was working with a team on a project that would help students on a free and reduced program get food in their stomachs. And it's common sense, like you said, there is a lot of research to show that we can't get past those primitive needs to feed our bodies and learn until we've had enough food and we've had enough to drink, you know, and that was an incredible project. That was an incredible experience because it did have a tremendous impact on these students' ability to focus in class and to perform just for the simple fact that they were able to eat breakfast and they were able to eat lunch.
100%. And that's a great example, Jeremy, of where a multi-tiered systems of support really takes into account those factors. Right. That's the broad nature of really what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I love it. Well, let's keep building on this. There are lots of questions that we could go in lots of directions. Thankfully, we have a good amount of time. And you did discuss this a little bit, but maybe we can go in a little more detail around the term SEL and mental health and where those converge, because it is such an important topic in the country. We're seeing the Safer Communities Act of 2022 that was passed not too long ago. We see that California Governor Newsom has announced a $4.7 billion bill or plan, if you will, that will address mental health. So we read all these things, we hear all these things. Help us reconcile mental health and SEL at a practical level.
Yeah, This is an area where I know you and I share a passion for, and I call this one of my soapbox issues. So forgive me for getting up on my soapbox.
Hey, get on that soapbox, John.
For just a moment. The reality is, as we talk about social emotional learning and SEL, I do look at that as part of mental health because it goes right along with what I was saying just a moment ago, and I mentioned earlier, that for me, the promotion of mental wellness, helping kids in terms of developing emotional regulations, how do they kind of regulate those big feelings that they have at times? How do they manage conflicts in their life? How do they develop relationships in their life? It's all about building those social emotional competencies. Mm-hmm. And that is part of mental wellness. And
amen.
we have a role within the schools to do that. It should be part of our universal supports. All of our kids need these types of skills. Mm-hmm. All of our kids need to know how to regulate their emotions. All of our kids need to know how to manage conflict in life. All of our kids need relationship building skills. So social emotional competency is part, or should be part, of our mental health promotion, our mental health, our mental wellness, I don't care what you call it, as I said before, our approach there. So there's a clear intersection that is there. We also know, and the research is very clear, the Collaborative for Academic Social Emotional Learning, or CASEL, CASEL.org, has done some amazing research around social and emotional learning. And this is often something I talk to my teacher colleagues about, is that when we teach kids these competencies and we help them develop it, they actually perform better in the classroom. They perform better on academic skill building. And so I talk about it with my teacher colleagues about, I'm gonna help you be more effective in that classroom by helping our kids develop these social emotional competencies. So it's part of what I had said before. It's mental health, social emotional learning, it's all part about the promotion of learning for kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I had an experience not too long ago with an administrator who's basically said, we don't do SEL. We're focused on the climate and the culture.
Yeah.
And that struck me as very interesting, because in my mind, those aren't independent or mutually exclusive, but rather, I think what this administrator was communicating was, look, that's our priority right now. And in order to build a healthy student body and to build wellness, we have to address climate and culture. You know, and I think as a country, as we move forward and we strive to really do what we're talking about here and help kids build the relational adeptness and skills, the resilience, but then also know how to cope with depression and anxiety, that we're looking at it from a holistic standpoint. And I think in my experience, what I've seen is that you almost have mental health, like you said, referring to anxiety, depression, and this maybe it's a diagnosed disorder of sorts, right? And then you have social emotional focused on those competencies that you also reviewed. And whereas they're very complementary to one another, and we have to create partnerships between school counselors and classroom teachers. So maybe this launches us into another follow-up question, which is, what are some of the mental health, I don't know, maybe practices is the best word, at a tier one level to help us address this for all students? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And I'm going to just quickly come back to the comment that this administrator made to answer this question, because it's a comment that we often hear. And I want to acknowledge, I want to fully acknowledge that different schools have different priorities. And absolutely. You know what? You know your school, and hopefully your priority setting is established based upon, you know, maybe some data that you're collecting or information that you have, you know, about where those challenges are coming in for students. And so, you know, when I hear an administrator say, well, we're focused on school climate, my reaction is similar to yours in that, well, okay, we can focus on school climate, but mental health is part of that. Social emotional competencies, you know, kids getting along, kids managing conflicts, it's all part of school climate. And so what we want to recognize at that tier one level, coming to the question itself, and what do mental health services look like at that tier one level? Again, let's kind of make sure we're on the same page. Tier one, universal supports, all kids get exposed
absolutely
to this.
Agreed.
So these are all, or things that exist within the school environment itself. So a few examples, I always think back to a comment that a colleague and good friend of mine, Byron McClure, made to me, where he said, you know, oftentimes schools will go to a guide and they'll pick out a curriculum and they'll try and implement it in their schools. And then they kind of come back and say, well, it didn't work. And so what's very important to recognize is that you have to choose a program or an approach that fits your needs, that fits your community. You said it before, Jeremy, it's not a one size fits all. And so as we talk about social emotional curriculums or programs or approaches, we have to recognize we need to understand our school population and what the needs are. We need to understand our community and what the needs are of the community that exists there. Now, to me, sometimes social emotional learning is not always about curriculum. It's not always about let's purchase this curriculum. Let's not, you know, kind of bring in this, you know, program. I working 35 years in the schools, I often walked into a teacher's classroom and said, I got this great program and I want to do it in your classroom. And more times than not, the teacher
would say to me, did that teacher just look at you and say, oh, come on, John, not one more thing.
Now, I like to pride myself on having good relationships with my colleagues, but yes, they were very direct and said, John, where and when. And so what I think is really important for us to recognize is that there are ways to infuse this work into what we're already doing. We don't need to bring in something brand new, something additional, something that a teacher needs to learn. No, we can often look at what teachers are already doing within the classroom, using literature, using books. And we could talk about, you know, books at a kindergarten level all the way up through 12th grade. We could talk
about-
What
you mean is, you know, a book on the topic of building a competency, right?
Absolutely.
So if we're teaching a reading skill that day in class, let's use a book that discusses Susie and Johnny resolving a conflict.
100%.
Yeah.
Building relationship. How Johnny, you know, had to manage his strong emotions, you know, at the high school level. And I primarily worked at the high school level. There's lots of examples of literature that the kids are reading where we could pull out all kinds of social emotional competency types of themes and use it and infuse it within the classroom itself. Those are important. But beyond social emotional learning, I think we also recognize their resiliency building skills. And how do we really help kids develop? You know, it's important to allow challenge. It's important to allow at times, and I know this seems a little counterintuitive, but there are times where kids struggle to a certain level is not a bad thing. Working through resolving conflicts, working through difficulties actually helps develop that sense of resiliency. Mm-hmm. Knowing that we have people there to support us is important, but also developing a sense of competency is an important resiliency building skill.
Yeah, and the self-awareness that's so important with saying, I did that. And the ability to rely on yourself to do something versus a third party to mediate a conflict, but that I can sit in an uncomfortable space and I can have a conflict, or I can build a relationship, I can feel awkward, I can love who I am. There's actually a really interesting comment in here. And then there's another one that we probably should go back to from Jessica, but Mike is suggesting some great ideas. And I'd love to hear your reaction to this, John, and maybe some additional ideas. But how about supports that extend outside of the school, like incorporating good sleep and nutrition education, or educating on blue lights, et cetera, that, you know. And then the very last one, which I think is key, and is parent, right? Parent education, because they're part, that this is their child. We can't forget about the parent. So what comments do you have, either validating or building on?
No, and what was it, Mike, who offered those? Mike, you bring up some excellent suggestions there. It was kind of where I wanted to go next in terms of, let's branch outside of the classroom, because yes, there are lots of things that we could do in the classroom, but school-wide supports are a critical part of tier one interventions. We talk about positive behavioral supports, some type of, here's your school climate issue that the administrator was talking about before. That's all part of the tier one interventions that are there. But I love the piece that Mike brought up about parents, because yes, parents are part of this process. And doing parent education, for me, is a tier one support. Whether it be about good sleep habits, or whether it be about infusing in conflict management and helping them to work that into some of the work they're doing at home.
Community resources.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lots of options.
You know, coming back to your example before about nutrition and the project that you worked on, prior to ELUMA, Jeremy, quite honestly, those are all factors. That's why an MTSS type of framework really is broad and encompasses all of these different factors.
I love that. Mike, thank you so much for your comment. John, thank you for your insight. I think it's safe to say and assume here that schools are looking at this complex set of factors and issues and then prioritizing based on data, based on their students, based on their own teacher feedback. There's a topic back here that Jessica brings up that I think we need to address. It's a tricky one. And it says, I have grave concerns about the rhetoric and extreme parent advocacy groups against SEL in schools. Are you seeing this in your area as well? Do you have suggestions on how to market or advocate for mental health wellness in SEL? And if you don't mind, I'd like to make a comment to kick this off and then hear what you have to say, John. There are lots of different rhetoric and advocacy that's happening. So I don't know exactly what you're talking to specifically, Jessica, but there is a very common one and a very popular one that I am aware of right now. And that is a school's ability to screen students without parent consent. That's been a big topic of discussion in many areas of this country. And I think that that's a challenging situation. The stance today is that because it's a screening and it's not a formal assessment to determine eligibility or categorical, placement, a school is allowed to do screening, of the students that might need some, to check in on their social, emotional, or mental wellness across the school. And that does inform many of the tier one practices that schools are implementing across the country. I think another one is how involved parents should be or should not be in talk therapy. If a student is engaged with a school counselor or a school psychologist around specific issues or questions regarding depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation. Again, that's tricky. I don't have a good answer for that one, other than schools hiring great professionals who make great judgments based on their training, right? And there's got to be a level of trust there. And I think that's where it starts, is can we trust each other? And how do we build that trust if it's not there? John, I've spoken too much.
No. I think you tapped into one of the areas, and it was Jackie, correct, who posed the question?
Jessica,
I apologize. It was Jessica. I think you tapped into some of the areas that Jessica was alluding to. A couple of quick comments, but I think there are broader issues also that Jessica is referring to. Hey, listen, I'm a big believer. I'm a parent myself. Parents, and I know this is a cliche, but parents are partners in education. And we can't leave parents out of the process. And, you know, parent rights are critical, that we honor that and we respect that. My issue more comes in terms of informed parents. And I think that unfortunately there's a lot of misinformation that is in fact out there in terms of what we're trying to do in the schools and what we're trying to teach and help kids develop. And whether it relate to screening, whether it relate to the provision of services, you know, to students, you know, I think that that's one area of controversy. But I think that what Jessica is referring to also as it relates specifically to social emotional learning is that there has been some pushback in some communities across the nation in terms of social emotional learning. It's got caught up in a lot of the other rhetoric that unfortunately has become very politicized. What I really think is a misunderstanding of what social emotional learning and social emotional competencies are all about. You know, gets caught up with, and I want to be really careful because I always try to honor different views and different perspectives, but we hear words like indoctrination and we hear words like, somehow only teaching one point of view or one perspective, that might differ from a parent's, a point of view. And really for those of us that are doing this and working in the schools, we know that when we talk about social emotional competencies, we're not talking about indoctrinating kids. We're not talking about presenting only one perspective. And so for me, a lot of it comes in terms of parent education. And coming all the way back to Mike's point before about involving parents at that tier one, if we're going to do social emotional programming within the schools, it's important to talk to the community about exactly what we're doing. That's what I did within my own school community. I didn't run into significant pushback within my own community, but certainly there were questions about what were we teaching? What were we doing? What were we helping kids develop? And I found that the more we spoke to parents, the more understanding they were of what we were being asked to do. Now, admittedly, so that's not going to work for some parents. We know, and this is just part of the times we're living in, that there's a segment of our population that you know, has certain beliefs and certain viewpoints that we'll never be able to change some of that, and that presents challenges.
I really appreciate your answer there, and I think it resonates with a lot of us. It's getting good information, educating ourselves, educating each other, and hopefully we can somehow build trust between the different constituents in this process. We have time to end on one last question, and then I know, John, you want to talk about what's coming up, and we'll close and let everyone go. This last question is the intersection, or how does special education fit into MTSS? Can you talk to us a little bit about how and where does that fit into MTSS?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I think that many times, whether again you be an administrator or teacher or clinician, you're kind of wondering, well, you know, is special education something separate? Is it somehow a different system that we work in? And the simple answer is no. The simple answer is that our special education services should be and are often part of that multi-tiered system of support. They're at that tier three, the intensive support level. But as I had said earlier, to me, everyone in the school, and I genuinely mean everyone in the school, is responsible for a multi-tiered system of support. So our general educators, our administrators, our school counselors, our psychologists, social workers, nurses, you know, everyone involved with students is part of that multi-tiered system of support. And so while special education services may exist within that tier three intensive support, the reality is that these children are not tier three kids. They're our kids. They're everyone's kids. And so the general
educator, not a tier three student or a tier two student, they're a student who's receiving tier two interventions.
Exactly, right. Exactly. And so it's important as we look at our special education process that our kids have an opportunity to go through the levels of support. We should never immediately jump to that intensive special education level. Our kids should be receiving good quality universal supports, good quality interventions at that tier one level. If they're starting to show some you know, challenges, some difficulties, that we've given them the opportunity to experience the tier two targeted supports. If they're not responding to that, and this is kind of where, again, it fits in with that RTI model that we were talking about a little bit earlier, then we might look at more of a special education type of process at that tier three level. But for me, special education really, while the services may be housed or exist within that tier three, it really should be a continuum of services for these children.
Yeah, and I think that that last statement kind of summed up what I was thinking as well, is that universal at tier one is for all students. And really ultimately the goal and the objective of an MTSS framework is to bring all students back to tier one, right? We don't want students to forever be receiving tier two or tier three. We want them to be as healthy and as competent and prosperous as they can be. Now, that's not to say that there should be a stigma for kids who need extended amounts of help either, but the goal being that we want all kids to return back to that tier one. And just to clarify for our audience, because I think I know what we're talking about, what you're saying is special education usually exists at a tier three intensive level, although there are tier three interventions that aren't special education interventions.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, great clarification. I appreciate that, Jeremy, because yes, tier three is not all encompassing for special education. That's an example of a tier three type of intervention, but absolutely our gen ed kids can be involved at that tier three level if their needs exist there, 100%.
Yeah. Man. This has been such a fabulous conversation. You've provided so many insights. Thank you for all of those out there who have contributed to the conversation through registering, participating, asking questions, making comments. We're going to continue forward with our series, and this is a format that you can expect to have. Your input and your involvement does make a difference. You are part of the conversation. With that, John, I'm going to hand it back to you to tell us a little more about what's coming up, and then we'll close.
Well, thank you for that, Jeremy. I do appreciate it. You know, the series is Office Hours with Dr. John Kelly. And I often talk about it as, I'm inviting you in. I love having these conversations, if you can't tell already. But I love having these conversations. And it often is what I would have with colleagues within my office. And so to have the series entitled Office Hours with Dr. John Kelly, that's exactly what you'll experience. We're going to talk for the next nine or 10 different sessions about multi-tiered systems of support. I realize we didn't get to everything. We didn't get to all of your questions, but we promise to dive in deep at each level. We're going to spend some time talking about tier one services. Our next guest coming up, Dr. Kelly Valancourt Strobach, school psychologist. She's also works at the National Association of School Psychologists, does a lot of advocacy work. Is going to come in and talk about some of the upcoming funding that's available. We talked about resources before. It was a major roadblock that fortunately we're beginning to address. And Kelly's going to come in and talk a little bit about some of that. We have upcoming guests who are going to come and talk about using data. We're going to talk about teletherapy. We're going to dive into tier two services, tier three services at the end. So hopefully today we've kind of whet your appetite. We've given you an opportunity to think a little bit about this, but hopefully we're kind of leaving you with wanting just a little bit more. if you're leaving today a little frustrated, wanting a little bit more, I apologize, but that's part of what I tried to create today. But let me just quickly share, give you a little taste of what's coming up in our next couple of weeks. This is kind of an ongoing series that we have here. We have, Elum was putting on, and I'll let you talk a little bit about this, Jeremy. Yeah. Phyllis Wolfram.
We're so excited to welcome Phyllis. Phyllis is the executive director for CASE, has an incredible background in special education. will be taking, this is outside of the Office Hours with John Kelly webinar series. This is a one-off, and we do a lot of those one-offs. So come join us next Friday. That will be incredible with her. And then on the next slide, we've got the one that John referenced, which is with Kelly Valancourt. This is part of the MTSS and mental health webinar series or Office Hours with John Kelly. That's on September 14th. Go to eluma.com/webinars. Please register. You can register as far out into the future as you would like, whether you can attend live or just watch the recording. Please register. This is such a great amount of content. And then lastly, we just want to thank you for being here and thank you for spending your time with us. Follow us on social outlets, Facebook, Twitter, visit our website. Lots of great resources there. Have a wonderful day and we'll see you at the next webinar.
Thank you.